Érettségi vizsga angol nyelvből. Hallott szöveg értése emelt szint.
Welcome to the listening component of the Matura examination. The listening material and the instructions are recorded on the CD, and the tasks and instructions are printed in your test booklet. There are three tasks, and every recording will be played twice. The tasks will begin with some music, and then you will hear, and you can also read, the instructions to the task. This will be followed by a silent period on the CD in order to give you some time to look at the task in your test booklet before hearing the text. Then we will play the recording in one piece. After another short silent period, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. Please note that the first item in each task, marked with a tick, is always an example. The whole test is about 30 minutes long. Good luck.
Listen.
Task 1. In this section you will hear a strange story that happened in Kasuya, Japan. Your task will be to decide whether the following statements are true, false, or we do not know because the text does not say, and write the appropriate letter in the boxes on the right. Write A if the statement is true, write B if the statement is false, and write C if the text does not say. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. A means true, B means false, and C means the text does not say. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Have you ever had the feeling that you might have a ghost living in your house? And that it steals your clothes just to mess with you? Or maybe you have food in your pantry that seems to vanish? An elderly man living alone in the sleepy town of Kasuya in western Japan experienced the latter. Not accepting the ghost theory, however, he suspected that he was the victim of repeat burglaries after noticing food was going missing from his refrigerator. He decided to install security cameras linked to his mobile phone, and one day, when he was not at home, caught images of a person walking around the house while he was out. Believing he had detected the burglar, the man immediately contacted police. They arrived at the man's house in a few minutes, expecting to catch a burglar red-handed, but found the front door securely locked and the windows closed. We searched the house, checking everywhere someone could possibly hide, but we couldn't find anyone at first. a local police spokesman told the Associated Press. Eventually, however, they found a woman hiding on the top shelf of a built-in cupboard designed to store bed linen. Police said, "When we slid the door of the cupboard open, there she was, nervously curled up on her side. There was just enough room for her to lie down." They arrested the 58-year-old woman, who told the police that she had nowhere to live and had first taken up residence in the cupboard about a year ago, when the owner of the house had gone out and not locked the door. Police believe she may have moved between different addresses in the neighbourhood during her stowaway year. The woman did not apparently steal any money or other items from the house. The owner would not have been able to sniff out his uninvited guest because the woman took regular showers while he was out, and, according to police, she was unusually neat and clean.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Have you ever had the feeling that you might have a ghost living in your house? And that it steals your clothes just to mess with you? Or maybe you have food in your pantry that seems to vanish? An elderly man living alone in the sleepy town of Kasuya in western Japan experienced the latter. Not accepting the ghost theory, however, he suspected that he was the victim of repeat burglaries after noticing food was going missing from his refrigerator. He decided to install security cameras linked to his mobile phone, and one day, when he was not at home, caught images of a person walking around the house while he was out. Believing he had detected the burglar, the man immediately contacted police. They arrived at the man's house in a few minutes, expecting to catch a burglar red-handed, but found the front door securely locked and the windows closed. We searched the house, checking everywhere someone could possibly hide, but we couldn't find anyone at first, a local police spokesman told the Associated Press. Eventually, however, they found a woman hiding on the top shelf of a built-in cupboard designed to store bed linen. Police said, "When we slid the door of the cupboard open, there she was, nervously curled up on her side. There was just enough room for her to lie down." They arrested the 58-year-old woman, who told the police that she had nowhere to live and had first taken up residence in the cupboard about a year ago, when the owner of the house had gone out and not locked the door. Police believe she may have moved between different addresses in the neighbourhood during her stowaway year. The woman did not apparently steal any money or other items from the house. The owner would not have been able to sniff out his uninvited guest because the woman took regular showers while he was out, and, according to police, she was unusually neat and clean.
That is the end of task one. Class 2. In this section, you are going to hear an interview with John Grisham, the author of popular legal thriller books. Your task is to circle the letter or letters of the correct answer or answers in the boxes on the right. Please note that in this task, both answers may be correct. However, there is always at least one correct answer. This means you will have to circle one or two letters. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
At the other end of the line, I have John Grisham, the former lawyer who found his greatest success writing legal thrillers like A Time to Kill, The Firm, The Pelican Brief, and The Client. His latest book, The Appeal, is out January 27th. Hi, John, and thanks for talking to me.
Hi. I'm delighted to be on the program.
Let's start with a serious question. Is the criminal justice system broken?
It's a mess. More than 100 people have been sent to death row who were later exonerated because they weren't guilty or fairly tried. Most criminal defendants do not get adequate representation because there are not enough public defenders to represent them.
You always sympathize with the underdog. What drives that?
I was a lawyer for 10 years, a short time, but it molded me into what I am. My clients were little people fighting big corporations, so it was a natural thing to not only represent the little guy, but also to support him. It's the American way. That is, until the little guy gets to the top, and then we can't wait to see him fail.
Your stories typically feature at least one slimy attorney. Are most lawyers like that?
Not a lot, but there are enough of the slimy ones to juice up the profession and to create a lot of good stories. Nobody wants to read about the honest lawyer down the street who does real estate loans and wills. If you want to sell books, you have to write about the interesting lawyers, the guys who steal all the money and take off. That's the fun stuff.
You recently wrote your first nonfiction book, The Innocent Man. Will you write more like it?
No. Nonfiction is too much work. I'm too lazy to do all the research. I actually never thought about writing nonfiction. But when I saw the story, I knew I had to write it. Mind you, truth is far stranger than fiction. Nobody would have believed The Innocent Man if I had written it as a novel.
You produce a book almost every year. Does that impact the quality?
I don't think so. If I had more time, I wouldn't use it. I'd wait until the last 3 months and write the book. I learned how to delay things that I should do in my law school. I perfected it as I practiced law, and now I am an expert. I've written stuff when I had plenty of time, and it wasn't very good.
Do you ever get writer's block? You know, when simply nothing interesting seems to spring to mind?
I have the opposite problem. Every year in late spring, when it is time to start writing a book, I have so many ideas. There are always a dozen bad ideas that never take place. If people knew how easy a story comes, they would really hate me.
If everyone read A Time to Kill, I think they would come away with a better understanding of racial relations. Was that your intention when you wrote the book?
When I wrote the book, I didn't even know it was going to get published. I had no idea what impact the book would have, especially among African Americans. I'm thrilled that it has. It's a very accurate portrayal of racial relations in the Deep South.
Would you ever consider writing a series?
After 12 to 15 books, you start thinking about writing something different. That is one reason I wrote Skipping Christmas, Bleachers, and Playing for Pizza, books with no lawyers. I have thought about a series, but not seriously. I don't have the idea. I'm waiting on the inspiration.
My mom thinks you're better looking than Tom Cruise. Why didn't you star in the film The Firm instead?
It is very simple. I have no acting talent whatsoever. It is amazing what you can do with photography these days, so don't be too impressed.
John Grisham, thanks for the interview.
My pleasure.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
At the other end of the line, I have John Grisham, the former lawyer who found his greatest success writing legal thrillers like A Time to Kill, The Firm, The Pelican Brief, and The Client. His latest book, The Appeal, is out January 27th. Hi, John, and thanks for talking to me.
Hi, I'm delighted to be on the program.
Let's start with a serious question. Is the criminal justice system broken?
It's a mess. More than 100 people have been sent to death row who were later exonerated because they weren't guilty or fairly tried. Most criminal defendants do not get adequate representation because there are not enough public defenders to represent them.
You always sympathize with the underdog. What drives that?
I was a lawyer for 10 years, a short time, but it molded me into what I am. My clients were little people fighting big corporations. So it was a natural thing to not only represent the little guy, but also to support him. It's the American way. That is, until the little guy gets to the top, and then we can't wait to see him fail.
Your stories typically feature at least one slimy attorney. Are most lawyers like that?
Not a lot, but there are enough of the slimy ones to juice up the profession and to create a lot of good stories. Nobody wants to read about the honest lawyer down the street who does real estate loans and wills. If you want to sell books, you have to write about the interesting lawyers, the guys who steal all the money and take off. That's the fun stuff.
You recently wrote your first non-fiction book, The Innocent Man. Will you write more like it?
No. Non-fiction is too much work. I'm too lazy to do all the research. I actually never thought about writing non-fiction. But when I saw the story, I knew I had to write it. Mind you, truth is far stranger than fiction. Nobody would have believed The Innocent Man if I had written it as a novel.
You produce a book almost every year. Does that impact the quality?
I don't think so. If I had more time, I wouldn't use it. I'd wait until the last 3 months and write the book. I learned how to delay things that I should do in my law school. I perfected it as I practiced law, and now I am an expert. I've written stuff when I had plenty of time, and it wasn't very good.
Do you ever get writer's block? You know, when simply nothing interesting seems to spring to mind?
I have the opposite problem. Every year in late spring, when it is time to start writing a book, I have so many ideas. There are always a dozen bad ideas that never take place. If people knew how easy a story comes, they would really hate me.
If everyone read A Time to Kill, I think they would come away with a better understanding of racial relations. Was that your intention when you wrote the book?
When I wrote the book, I didn't even know it was going to get published. I had no idea what impact the book would have, especially among African Americans. I'm thrilled that it has. It's a very accurate portrayal of racial relations in the Deep South.
Would you ever consider writing a series?
After 12 to 15 books, you start thinking about writing something different. That is one reason I wrote Skipping Christmas, Bleachers, and Playing for Pizza, books with no lawyers. I have thought about a series, but not seriously. I don't have the idea. I'm waiting on the inspiration.
My mom thinks you're better looking than Tom Cruise. Why didn't you star in the film The Firm instead?
It is very simple. I have no acting talent whatsoever. It is amazing what you can do with photography these days, so don't be too impressed.
John Grisham, thanks for the interview.
My pleasure.
That is the end of Task 2. Task 3. In this section, you are going to hear a story about a very lucky or unlucky person. Your task will be to write one word in each of the gaps below using the exact words that you hear in the recording. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Sam, an unemployed bus driver, said it was only the second thing he had ever won in his life. The first thing was a photo album at a school raffle when he was 17 years old. But this was much bigger. It was $120,000. He had won the Big Cube, a California state lottery game. To win, contestants have to take part in a television show where they must first guess which number a spinning cube will stop on. The cube has six numbers on it. If he is correct, the contestant must then guess which of two selected variables is going to be greater. So, just guessing which number appears on the cube does not guarantee that you will win any money. Sam correctly guessed the number the cube stopped on, but he still had to choose between two variables. One variable was the number of cars that would run the stop sign at Hill Street and Lake Avenue in San Francisco in 6 hours. The other variable was the number of times that an average American teenage boy would change TV channels in a 3-hour period. He knew that he would win as many times $1,000 as the number in the greater variable. This was a tough decision. Finally, Sam flipped a coin. It came up heads, so Sam picked the teenager. He picked right. The stop sign was run only 76 times, but the average teen clicked 120 times. 60-year-old Sam jumped for joy, for he had just won 120 times $1,000, that is, $120,000. Sam dreamily left the lottery studio. Talking excitedly on his cell phone while crossing the street, however, he got hit by a little sports car. Sam is slowly getting better. He was in the hospital for a month. His hospital bill was $110,000, and the insurance company for the little sports car's owner sued Sam for $9,000 worth of repairs. Also, Sam still has to pay taxes on his winnings. Sam doesn't play the state lottery anymore. He says it's better to be unlucky.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Sam, an unemployed bus driver, said it was only the second thing he had ever won in his life. The first thing was a photo album at a school raffle when he was 17 years old. But this was much bigger. It was $120,000. He had won the Big Cube, a California state lottery game. To win, contestants have to take part in a television show where they must first guess which number a spinning cube will stop on. The cube has six numbers on it. If he is correct, the contestant must then guess which of two selected variables is going to be greater. So, just guessing which number appears on the cube does not guarantee that you will win any money. Sam correctly guessed the number the cube stopped on, but he still had to choose between two variables. One variable was the number of cars that would run the stop sign at Hill Street and Lake Avenue in San Francisco in 6 hours. The other variable was the number of times that an average American teenage boy would change TV channels in a 3-hour period. He knew that he would win as many times $1,000 as the number in the greater variable. This was a tough decision. Finally, Sam flipped a coin. It came up heads, so Sam picked the teenager. He picked right. The stop sign was run only 76 times, but the average teen clicked 120 times. 60-year-old Sam jumped for joy, for he had just won 120 times $1,000, that is, $120,000. Sam dreamily left the lottery studio. Talking excitedly on his cell phone while crossing the street, however, he got hit by a little sports car. Sam is slowly getting better. He was in the hospital for a month. His hospital bill was $110,000, and the insurance company for the little sports car's owner sued Sam for $9,000 worth of repairs. Also, Sam still has to pay taxes on his winnings. Sam doesn't play the state lottery anymore. He says it's better to be unlucky.
That is the end of Task 3, and also the end of the listening exam.